the Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available on iTunes and at davedameshek.nfl.com. Now here's your host, Dave Dameshek.
Hi and hello, football fans. It's your old pal Dave. Dave Dameshek. What's going down? I hope all's well wherever you are. Welcome to episode number 156 of the Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available, as always, on NFL.com/Shek, S-H-E-K, and iTunes. I switched it up. Usually I do those two in the other order there. Either way, let's press on. Back from Seattle, the Pacific Northwest. You know him from NFL.com. He's got a pick six up there right now talking about which NFL players would make good WWE wrestling stars. I'm sure our pal AJ Hawk enjoyed that piece. It's Adam Rank. What's the poop, fella?
Hey, boss. Thanks for having me. Flip me around. It's like when you have to go and switch hit, because I'm used to the iTunes, available on iTunes. Just saying those words soothes me, and it is the signal that the podcast is about to begin. But now that you've thrown a monkey wrench into the whole thing, I don't know.
Let's do it. Did you have a good time in Seattle?
When I wasn't around Black Tie, yes.
Black Tie was there with you, yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, it was weird. We had a weird, and you can go back and listen to episode 155 from earlier in the week here.
Loved it because it had no Black Tie.
Yeah, well, there was a big response to that, to his absence. And in fact, like they say, absence makes the heart grow fonder. I did, in fact, get some social media notes from devoted listeners saying, boy, I've never missed Black Tie so much. But before we get into anything else, let me just say, here's what we have coming up for you. We're going to talk with the great Maurice Jones-Drew. We want to kibitz with him about the top 100 list. That just wrapped up on NFL Network. Depending on when you're listening here, we just finished that up Thursday night, of course, counting it down from 60 down to 51. And also be on the lookout for the halftime show coming up here, because obviously now that we're at 51, if my math is correct, we're halfway through this year's top 100 list. So we'll talk about that, talk about how the Jags are looking, those uniforms, so on and so forth, with MJD. And then also the Around the League Debate Club boys are going to be in here for their weekly debate club. So much to discuss here. Rank, Seattle, beautiful.
Yes.
Though, eh?
Great town.
I mean, I think I still go San Francisco as our most beautiful city in these United States. But Seattle, right up there, top two or three, I would say.
Easily, yes.
Yeah. In the meantime, in your stead, Handsome Hank sat in your chair.
Oh, good.
Is that cool?
Let's go with me.
He jumped in there. I said, I don't know about this temerity. He said, I don't care. Rank who? And we got into a good discussion about pizza toppings.
Actually, I heard that wasn't good.
You heard that wasn't good.
No, people did not enjoy that.
They didn't.
The social media turned on you on that one. They said, you know, it's weird.
This is what it is. Because I go bold with my pick, then they have to berate.
You're contrarian to be contrarian. It's starting to fall flat.
It is not contrarianism to say that I like meatball and onion together. That's glorious.
Go have a hoagie then.
Well, I got news for you. Necktie Milner sat behind that glass there. That's the main reason people were upset with Black Tie's absence, because he said pineapple and pepperoni, which is just, that's an outrage.
It's terrible. The correct answer is jalapeno. It's the wave of the future.
It's very good. I like peppers on pizza, be they green, banana, jalapeno, or otherwise. All right, now let's say hello to a man who is our resident Dolphins ambassador here, all the way from across the Atlantic Ocean. It's Handsome Hank.
He's Handsome Hank from England, handsome from England. He's Handsome Hank from England, handsome from England. He's Handsome Hank from England, handsome from England. His name is Handsome Hank. He's Handsome Hank, he's Handsome Hank, he's Handsome Hank.
Hello, Handsome. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. Thank you, Dave. Thanks for having me back again for a second time this week.
Certainly.
Do you want
a lot
your
of
chair
heat.
Back?
No. I'm very happy sitting here. I like looking into your eyes.
Thank you.
Those blue eyes of yours are divine.
There was a lot of heat off of the the best two topping combo.
Really was. And I'm stunned. There are people on social media actually defending the pineapple choice, which is extraordinary.
Yeah. No, shame on them.
I thought it had been made illegal in several states, and the fact that people are actually out there defending it is.
I don't think it would be going too far. far for it to be a misdemeanor.
Oh, I think
to put pineapple on a pizza.
Probably
yeah, right.
60 buck fine. Don't do it again.
I mean, I don't think you need to do hard time necessarily.
Well,
but
three times, three strikes, mm-hmm. then maybe some jail time.
Right.
You should have to do it
tough
in a
but
back.
Fair.
It should be like a back alley. You gotta, maybe, I found.
All right. Here's something else shameful. Another list that has raised that's gotten a fair amount of heat. It's the top 100 players of 2013 list. Like I say, the latest 10 names have now been unveiled, counting it down from 60 to 51. You go Jared Allen, Derek Johnson, the fine linebacker of the KC Chiefs. Then there's Victor Cruz, unsigned as of the time of this recording. Doug Martin. Let's find out how MJD feels about being only the second best Florida-based running back behind the rookie Doug Martin there.
Phrase it to him that way.
That's what I'll say to him. That's what
you won't.
I don't jive. You know me. I don't like. There's no jive talk. That's the one rule I have. Then you go Terrell Suggs. Once again, raising the question. If you were hurt for a large chunk of the season, as Suggs was, what would they come back? Right around week 9-ish, I think, in Houston?
Yeah,
they got smoked pretty good down in Houston in that game. That was his first game after the Achilles. And, by the way, should give Niners fans at least a little glimmer of optimism that Suggs made it back and contributed. That said, he didn't have a great season. It took him a long time to get up to speed. How he sits at number 56 when Roethlisberger is at 61, I guess he won a Super Bowl. What am I going to say? Terrell Suggs did do that. You know what else is scary? John Harbaugh, maybe a little hyperbolic with his enthusiasm for the 2013 Ravens. We might be a better team. I doubt that because the one and only guy. What, you think that the Ravens might be better this year than they were last season?
They weren't a very good regular season team, so I completely get where he's coming from.
That is exactly kind of what I was thinking. But here's the deficit that they have, as I see it: leadership. I know it's hard to quantify what that means in a locker room, but clearly, you look at their arch rival Pittsburgh Steelers. They lose some big pieces in terms of leadership, and that locker room imploded. Now you have no Ray Lewis and Ed Reed. Who is the vocal guy? The guy who, and we've asked that question of several Ravens here. Who's going to step up and fill that void? Ray Rice kind of laughs about it, like, well, it's not going to be me. Though he's relatively soft-spoken. Joe Flacco definitely is. Is it Suggs? He's bombastic, but I don't know that he's a leader of men in that way.
I think Suggs can be on defense, but I actually think Flacco, with winning a Super Bowl and being a Super Bowl MVP, is now empowered to be that kind of vocal leader.
I just don't think it's in him.
I don't know.
I think
he's
right.
Kind of he's pretty steely. I think the players will listen to him. Maybe a year ago it would have been difficult for him to do, but I think now you could probably rely on Flacco to do that.
At 55, you have JPP of the Giants, and you have Julius Peppers. Julius Peppers had a crummy season. Talk to any Bears fan, anybody who watched that team last year will point out that he was lackluster. Then you go Champ Bailey, classic Lifetime Achievement Award. There's no way that Champ Bailey at this point is a superior cover corner to Darrell Revis, and yet there he sits ahead of him.
Do they not watch the playoffs?
Yeah. Champ Bailey is a guy, he's a great talent, but, you know, this is a thing. A lot of people are so high on the Broncos this year and what they're going to do. I feel like they lose Doomerville, and Champ Bailey is getting long in the tooth. I don't know that this defense is, I mean, that defense was really good and has been for the last two seasons. I think they take a little bit of a dip here this season, and if that defense isn't great, I'm not positive that the Broncos are going to win the division like most people are. And the declaration that the Broncos are absolutely positively the best team in the AFC, also questionable to me.
And you also, if you've been paying attention to our NFL.com top 20 games of 2012, number 8 was the Broncos-Chargers game. And people forget that, you know, if San Diego hangs on to a 24-point lead, which you think should have been a slam dunk at that point, Broncos fall to 2-4. After that game, that season might spiral out of control, and then things could be a lot different there. So I think it's not out of the realm of possibility that the Broncos could take a step back. Plus, you know me, I'm going to say the Chiefs are going to be better.
I mean, but the overarching point, Champ Bailey, 53, that means that there are, if my math is correct, that means that there are now four corners left on the list. Then you go Vincent Jackson, who did indeed have a dynamite season, and Russell Wilson at number 51, closing out the first half. The he of the sexy deep ball. Vincent Jackson, though.
Yeah.
And I mean, and Doug Martin. So in the top 60 players in all the NFL, two of them are Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Well, and also, was Vincent Jackson's season was good? But was it so good that he's suddenly gone from, I don't think he was on this list last year, to finding his way all the way up into, that just seems extraordinary that, like, surely you should have a gradual move up the list. Because fine for a player like Russell Wilson, fine for a player like Andrew Luck, RG3, guys who actually, really stood out last year and changed their teams around. But Vincent Jackson didn't that much.
I understand this isn't a sport of individuals, but, shouldn't it's the same thing as all those Chiefs getting to the Pro Bowl last year, this bum team. How humiliating must it be to be on the Chiefs and not be one of those Pro Bowlers? Same goes for Tampa Bay. Oh, wait, we have two of the top 60 players. Wow, we should be pretty good. Oh, except that I'm on the team. It must give them self-esteem issues to realize that. Russell Wilson now, by my math, there are 10 QBs. Yeah, that's right. 10 more quarterbacks left there. RG3 obviously will be among them. Andrew Luck is going to be up there.
Ryan Tannehill. You don't think he's in the top 50?
I'm thinking Tannehill is not going to be in there. Yeah, no, I don't know that's going to happen.
He might be 50.
Yeah.
I did have a couple conversations on the radio. I talked with the Finnsiders about your Dolphins. They're very excited, very optimistic.
So they should be.
As you would imagine. The thing that they couldn't answer any better than anyone else, though, are we absolutely certain that all this excitement, all the fireworks in the offseason, it all sort of now hinges on whether or not Jonathan Martin can play left tackle? Because if that doesn't work out, then it's all for naught.
I think, and I may be wrong here, but I think he actually spent 3 years protecting Andrew Luck's blind side at Stanford. So I think we know that he can play left tackle.
Hey, this is pro football, though. This is next level. I don't know. In this league, I don't know. I like just saying in this league because that's a popular phrase.
NFL game is not played in Studio 66.
Steve Smith says it pretty much the best there.
We know it's not played here.
I also talked with some Englishmen, too.
Friends from the Tuesday Morning Football podcast.
Over there in the UK. Big fans of the show, which is terrific. Knowledgeable football men. Big fans of Rank. Big fans of Black Tie. Some crosswords for Handsome Hank. I was surprised.
Why?
Because they said that you lie. You come on this podcast and lie. They say you misrepresent their land and they don't appreciate
how
it.
So?
Well, listen, we consider you the Dolphins ambassador, but Englishmen consider you their ambassador. You're trying to put a positive face on the UK.
It needs a positive face, does it?
Well, listen, all I know is this. They said, hey, Handsome Hank, one of our favorite episodes of the Damashek program was when he brought in crisps, potato chips. You brought in a variety for us to taste.
Yes. Did you have a problem with them at the time?
I thought they were fine, but they pointed out that they said that you were lazy and you just grabbed whatever was at the airport.
Untrue.
That's what they said.
Well,
that's the charge
untrue.
From your countrymen was that you brought in second-rate crisps, and they said now it's imperative that we get over there for the Vikings-Steelers game in late September so they can introduce us to proper crisps.
Well, look, two things I will say about this, and I'll be very quick. First of all, untrue. I got them from a corner shop near the hotel where I was staying in London. I didn't want to expose you to the most extraordinary flavors because I don't want to. Your American palates aren't developed enough to try, a Monster Munch Flaming Hot Crisp. That would be too much for you.
Monster Munch Flaming Hot Crisp. Yep. The Englishmen are so refined, aren't they?
A little bit.
Such
fancy.
Classy people. Monster Munch.
Now, hey, I remember when I went on with them, and it should be pointed out that I went on before you.
That's something else that I brought up with them. I didn't care for that move either.
Wait, what?
That they come around to me after they finish with Handsome Hank and you.
Shouldn't I?
Then Damashek, as an afterthought. Yeah, we'll squeeze you in, too.
I'm opening up for you.
Oh, I see.
Like this Sunday.
I'm like the headliner.
Yes, like this Sunday when I'm opening up for David Spade at the Irvine Improv.
Oh,
I go on before
is that
him.
Right? Cool.
Well, Kevin Farley's there. David Spade's supposed to drop in.
Kevin Farley?
Yes.
Is that the brother of?
Chris Farley's brother. He's the headliner, and David Spade's supposed to drop in.
Oh, cool. Good for you. All right, so there's Rank over there at the Improv. I wanted to say something very quickly about a little brush with greatness I had. I went out with a chum of mine, Tall John, one of the great fellas in all of show business. Caught up with him at this place, the Soho House. Are you familiar with it?
Of course.
You know, I'd never been there, but I'd heard tale of it. It started in London. Mm-hmm. It's like a membership club kind of thing.
Club, yes.
But it really is just like a bar and restaurant, but it's spectacular. Great
really
views
is.
Of Los Angeles and all these different things. And what I had heard is you always see there are always celebrities in there, and because it's the hoi polloi. There's no riffraff. The common man ain't gaining entry in there. You know, this is where they can go. It's their shelter.
They can rub shoulders.
That's right.
Without people like you or I interrupting.
No. Usually you're right, except last night Damashek was in there rubbing elbows. And who did I see? This is pretty good. Ron Wood of the Rolling Stones.
Whoa.
Can you beat that? Can you beat seeing a Rolling Stone?
I can. I actually went there one time, within a couple of months of arriving in L.A., and I'd never seen a celebrity at this point, and I was pretty excited. And you get in an elevator at the bottom of there.
Yeah, right.
And you travel up in an elevator. As the doors opened, I'd been waiting. I was with one friend. As the doors opened, 2 6-foot Amazon blondes walk out and a very small man behind them. And I was obviously impressed by these two women. And then as I focused on
Michael
on
Fabiano,
man, it wasn't Michael Fabiano on this occasion. It was a gentleman called Al Pacino.
Oh, I'm familiar with him.
And that was great. That was my first Soho House.
Pacino.
Pacino just steps out of the elevator.
Wow.
Very nice.
Does Pacino beat a Rolling Stone though?
I think they're about even. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was pretty cool, though, to see that. Also, less exciting was Bethany from one of those reality shows. You know who I'm talking about?
Bethany Frankel or something like that?
That's the one. And it was funny because I thought, wow, what a crazy range in celebrity to see Ron Wood and Bethany Frankel. And then I realized, wow, she doesn't look that dissimilar from Mick Jagger. But anyway.
And actually, she was probably thinking, Ron Wood was thinking the same thing.
Yeah.
Bethany Frankel and Dave Damashek, he saw her in there, and what a crazy range of...
Oh, he came up to me. Hey, mate, huge fan of your pigskin talk. You know, he loved that. Disagree on meatball and onion. You know,
right.
He didn't care for that. But otherwise, I guess he says we have some keen insights there.
I think you're crowing a little bit too much about this.
It's not me bragging. I'm not a member. I just went along.
First of all, I miss the days when you were a man of the people. But my
point
was,
still a man of the people. This is what I do. Don't you see? I sneak under the velvet ropes for football fans and for people who enjoy show business and stuff. That's what I do. I sneak in and I report back from the front. You understand?
You're hanging out with Ron Wolf now at some hoity-toity clubs and talking about whatever.
Who is Ron Wolf?
Or whoever you're talking
Ron
about.
Wolf.
Whoever the members of the Rolling Stones are who are not Mick Jagger or Keith Richards.
Oh, right, yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter. Like, you hung out, like, with... it's like you're hanging out with a Jaguar, and it's not MJD.
You're trying to get us into calling up old MJD. All right, one thing before we do. Let's round out our chat here about the top 100. We now know the first 50 names. Let's jump to the end of the novel here and at least predict some stuff. Who do you guys think is going to, I don't know, top three, top five? My hunch is that based on the fact that Adrian Peterson won the MVP. He's also going to be number one here. I would go Rodgers over him and then put Peterson right behind that. How do you guys sort of see the top five rank? I start with you.
Peterson number one, Peyton Manning number two.
You think this is how it's going to be or how you would vote?
Obviously, you wouldn't vote
Peyton Manning number two, right?
I'd switch that around. Peyton Manning number one, Adrian Peterson number two.
This is based on his peers vote.
Right.
All right. So that's kind of you may be right.
Manning 1, Peterson 2, Rodgers 3, Brady 4, and Dieter Brock 5.
Oh, look at that. Well done. I don't know that he's eligible, the last
not.
Name on that list,
see,
but you do get the point there.
Dieter Brock.
You're underestimating the power of the podcast.
Yeah.
I think that, you know what? That should be
haven't you seen his Wikipedia page? He's been made famous.
Who, Dieter Brock?
Yes.
Is that right?
His popularity has risen a ton since because of this podcast.
Terrific. Well, I disagree with this. I think J.J. Watt would be in there.
Yeah.
And is going to be in there ahead of Brady, at least. I bet you J.J. Watt's probably at about number four.
I could see the players hating Brady.
Well, they're not going to downgrade. Yeah, you're right. Peyton Manning will probably be three, but Aaron Rodgers, unquestionably. If you think these guys are voting around playoff time, they'll probably they had to have Aaron Rodgers at number two at worst, I would think. Then maybe, but yeah, they do love Peyton Manning. Those
Everybody loves Peyton Manning.
No one would ever say boo about that. Then you go J.J. Watt and then Tom Brady. That's my five. Handsome Hank. Oh, you know, we also leave out Calvin Johnson. Handsome, how say you?
Well, I think Megatron will probably be in there because, again, this list, as much as we love to believe that there are players involved in everything, there's two things we know. It's not going to all be quarterbacks. If you were drafting a team right now, probably the first five picks would be quarterbacks, but you've got to imagine one defensive player, and I agree with you that it's Watt, and one receiver, and AP is definitely going to be in there, but I would say Megatron probably makes the top five as well.
Would you, I don't know if that's true. If you said if for the next 5 years there would never be anything but a quarterback, but if you said for 2013, let's have a draft of all the players out there, do you don't think Adrian Peterson would sneak in there?
I don't think he would do. I think and I wasn't just talking about this season. I was talking about if all the players went in a pool and we started all over again, you've got to imagine the first five picks in that draft would all be quarterbacks.
Say about the first 12 would be quarterbacks. Maybe the first 15.
If I hear two things that we need to do to tweak the this top 100 between now and 2014, and I've already offered legitimately to do this. I want to take, instead of just blindly submitting your ballot, I think you need to be on record. I think you need to show it. I think you need to. I think I want to see one man, one vote. I want to see who you're voting for, and I want it all listed out there. And I want to do it on camera too.
That'd be awesome because it would never happen.
I don't care.
You know more than anybody.
Hey, look here. There's Ryan Clark is in studio. All right. Well, hey, while you're here, let's fill out your top 20 thing and have him put his name on it.
And then his handler would be there like, no, you can't fill that.
Why? What would happen?
Because they will not allow them to talk bad about anybody ever.
Well, they're not talking bad. They're talking good about people. I want to meet the guy who put Dennis Pitter on this list. I want to see who
that's exactly
was.
Right.
More than one person, presumably. There were enough players.
Well,
on
we
that.
Know
Where
that.
Was
yeah.
Pitter? Pitter was 100.
Right.
Who was the guy who put Pitter on the list?
Speaking of Dennis Pitter, guys, remember that tight end poll we put up about which one of the five tight ends we mentioned would not make the list? There's only four tight ends left.
Right. Totally well, wait a second. It's Vernon Davis, Gronk, Graham, Witten, Gonzalez.
Yes.
Okay, and we said, and so now 60 down to 51, none of them were revealed yet, so we still have those same. I said it's going to be Jason Witten. That's my guess.
You want to know the results of the poll?
Yeah, it's everybody's guessing, but yeah.
The results, actually, Jimmy Graham is odd man out.
Really?
Well,
people are wrong on that.
That's but people are crazy.
No chance that the NFL players are going to not have Jimmy Graham in the top 100 players. That's impossible. It's impossible.
Jimmy Graham.
If it
Jason
is,
Witten,
I cancel this list forever. Never. They're not allowed to do it ever again if Jimmy Graham is not ranked in the top 100 players. Well,
cancel the list forever if that happens.
That's what it's going to be. But right now, Black Tie, we have him on the phone here. Let's jump into it with him. The great running back of the Jacksonville Jaguars, number 98 on the top 100 list. It's Maurice Jones-Drew. Say hello to him, Rank.
How's it going, MJD?
Oh, going well. How are you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. I wanted to talk about these uniforms. Have you had the opportunity to see the new uniforms, and what do you think of them?
I had the chance to see them. I didn't put them on because my mom's still under my Reebok contract, so it would have kind of been against the deal. But I like them, a little different. They have an Oregon feel to them. I love the helmets, the two-tone helmets. I think it's just, this is a new deal we're starting here, and we want to continue doing some new things in Jacksonville and getting this deal, this new era going off on the right track.
Yeah, but MJD, come on, look at the two-tone helmets. It kind of looks like, I've compared it to, you ever have Skittles and leave them in a hot car for too long? It kind of looks a little melty like that,
It's different, and I think our whole deal is about, us understanding who we are and accepting that. And our owner, he has a little flavor to him, so he wanted to stand out a little bit. He wants Jacksonville to stand out, so when we play well, people know who we are.
Yeah, is there any Well, is there any chance that, because he does, I love that mustache and the head of hair he has. Do you think there's any chance that maybe it'd be a cool show of unity for everyone on the team to grow one of those mustaches?
I would try, but I don't. If you've seen some of my beard pictures, they're not the best looking. So,
well, I disagree with that. I think it's a handsome look for you. I think you should grow it out.
It'd be a cool thing to say to the rest of the NFL for every one of the Jaguars to run out onto the field with one of those mustaches. Just think about it. That's all. Just give
I'll talk with some guys and see if we can get that going.
Hey, MJD, I want to talk about this top 100 list. You've been looking at this through the springtime, right?
Right. I'll check it out.
All right. First, let's start with Maurice Jones-Drew. What did you think about your placement? Obviously, you missed the bulk of 2012. The year prior, though, you lead the league in the NFL. How did it strike you where your peers voted you right there at the back end, two spots ahead of the great Dennis Pitta?
I was actually surprised. You know, I figured I wouldn't be on it. You know, not being able to play, and what it was all about was the top 100 players from last year. So to miss close to 11 games, still be voting in the top 10, it's a very great honor. You know, I personally I told a lot about that. I didn't think I was good enough to play in that or to make it. So. They were, you know, I think we all were surprised.
Well, what about that then? So what is your philosophical thought then? I guess you just say if you don't think that maybe you even should have been on that list based on the fact that you missed the majority of last season, you missed, you know, pretty much all last season. What about guys like Darrell Revis? Because to me, and I mean the same applies to you in terms of running backs, but you look at Darrell Revis. In what universe would there be five cornerbacks ahead of Darrell Revis, right? So by that standard, it seems a little bit faulty to me that even though he misses all of last season or, you know, pretty much all but two games, it strikes me as a little off. How say you?
You know, I didn't vote, so I try not to vote in that thing because to me, you know, you're as valuable as your team allows you to be. And so, obviously, in his situation, he is probably the top corner when healthy in the league. And so, I remember facing him and some of our coaches scheming against him saying, like, okay, we can't do this going to that side. So he does have a presence in other locker rooms and in other coaching staff and coaching meetings. So that, I guess that does deserve being, you know, being on there, even though he didn't play but two games or how many other games he played. I mean, he still is an impact player for that team. You just saw how bad they were. When he wasn't playing.
Now you said you didn't vote. Do you know anybody who does?
I don't know. I don't ask them if they vote or not. That's up to them. If they choose to vote, that's their deal.
Well, you start pressing them. You ask them if they vote or not. But one guy I did want to ask you about because we just watched the show being unveiled and Doug Martin came in there. He's there in the 50s. You know, I figure, you know, that's a pretty good spot for him. Now, did you get a chance to watch him last year, and what do you think about him?
Oh, no, Doug's done a great job with what they asked him to do. I've talked with him a little bit, and he loves the game, and he loves he just loves to play hard, and that's something you rarely see in young guys. And so he's going out there learning the system, doing a great job. I saw him tear up Oakland, which was crazy. But, you know, I'm very proud of him. You know, he's done a great job, and hopefully he continues doing great things.
What do you – well, by the way, that makes you the second-ranked running back in all the state of Florida. So good news. You're ahead of Daniel Thomas and Lamar Miller at least. That's something.
Yeah, I still figure, I mean, my production should say I'm number one. But
well, I happen to agree. You know, you talk about getting up for games and, you know, what is it like for you? And, you know, everybody's optimistic. That's one of the great things about the NFL is that you have a shot when it's August and you can realistically conjure away that there's a path to the playoffs. But once you get to, let's say, the quarter pole of a season, and you guys, you've had some seasons there where you're 1-3, 0-4, things look bleak. How do you get up for a game when you are, I mean, you are you know, Maurice Jones-Drew, as much as anybody in the NFL, defines the team he's on. You are the star of that team. How do you get up for games by the time it's, let's say, Halloween and you know you're not going to the playoffs? What's your frame of mind sitting in the locker room on a Sunday morning getting ready to go out there and get hit for the next 3 hours?
Well, we have a job to do, you know, and my job is to play, to run the ball the best I can whenever I'm out there. That's the first take of it. Second is, you know, you never know what's going to happen in this league. You know, you never know what might happen. I remember a couple years ago, I think it was a team.
Tennessee that went 0-6, 0-7, and then they...
Yeah, 0-6, and then made a run to the playoffs. Right. I mean, things like that, you never know. So you always play. And, I mean, there's been some years where we thought we were mathematically, I guess, eliminated from the playoffs, but then all we had to do was win one out of four games. And then we'd have made it. And, you know, when you take things like that, when you go through things like that, it makes every game important. I remember my fifth year in the league, we lost to New York in New York Giants in a late. They came back in the second half, and in the fourth quarter had a late touchdown drive, and we couldn't come back. And if we'd have won that game, we'd have won the AFC South, hands down. We wouldn't have had to play the Colts for the championship to go to the playoffs. And then we wouldn't have had to win one game after that. So it's little things like that that you try your best to take care of right off the bat so you don't have to worry about it. So that's why we play hard every game, no matter what happens. No matter what your record is, you go out there and you play hard. And then you see what happens come December.
Let's talk about the Jags going into 2013. You're a big fantasy guy. Let me give you two names. You give me one name. If this is MJD's team, choose one or the other. Cecil Shorts, Justin Blackmon.
Well, obviously, early on, you're going to say Cecil Shorts just because of Blackmon and the suspension he has. But I tell you the truth, they're both going to do phenomenal in this new offense. It's a playmaker's offense. It's going to be very explosive. I don't want to get too much into it. But if we continue to work the way we've been working, I know we're in shorts and things aren't going the way, you know, you're not using pads and people don't like to, and I'm not a big shorts guy, but just the way we're throwing and catching right now is 10 times better than what it's been around this time in the past. So we just want to continue on that. And hopefully these guys, we were able to show up and play well in September. And if we play well in September, then we'll be okay. Then we can take it 1 month at a time, one game at a time, and we'll be back to where we need to be.
Just tell me one thing. All right, so you're not going to say Henny or Gabbard. I know you're not going to reveal that. But what's practice in the early going look like with Shoelace Robinson? Are we going to see some fun stuff out of this guy?
Yeah, he's very exciting, very fast. We're still trying to get him to tie those shoelaces up because we don't want him to get hit by one of these guys and his shoes get knocked off. But he's very talented. You know, he's done a great job coming in, learned the playbook, and he's fast. I mean, one thing our GM Dave Caldwell has done is put a lot of speed out there and a lot of guys that can make plays with the ball in their hands. So we'll see how it goes, but very excited to see him come out and play. It's going to be another person to help us and help our offense and help Lane or Chad be successful. You know, Mercedes is having a great offseason, a great camp, which is really exciting. And really from there, we just want to keep working and improving week after week. So when we do get to the season, we'll be ready to roll and give ourselves the best chance to be successful.
Just make sure this. Don't let anybody, including Denard Robinson himself, ever call himself Denard. Shoelace is a great nickname. You know, that's really about as good a nickname as there is. Make sure that's the only thing he answers to, you know?
Oh, yeah. Now, we're working on him right now. We don't have a long way to go because he was a star in college, so he knows how to handle the media. But he's doing a great job for us. You know, you can't say anything negative about him. I mean, when you can run that speed all the time, you will be fine.
You know, here's something else. We like to try and figure out things in list form here. Where does Maurice Jones-Drew, the MJD nickname, gets most of the ink? But your name is Maurice. And I like that name. That's a cool, an old school name, Maurice. Where do you rank yourself among famous Maurices in history?
I don't know too many Maurices, so.
Well, I'll tell you a couple. There's Maurice Rocket Richard of the Montreal Canadiens, you know, one of the great goal scorers in NHL history. There's Mo Cheeks, Maurice Cheeks, of course, the great point guard of those Philadelphia 76ers teams. And then there's Maurice Sendak, who wrote Where the Wild Things Are. Now that you have some names, how do you feel you stack up?
Never really watched NHL, but I'll put myself fourth because it seems like those guys have been around a long time. They've put a lot of hard work in, and they've been successful. I'm still working on that path to being the best that I can be and help my team win a championship. So when we win the championship, then I'll be able to move up.
All right. Well, that's interesting. But I'm going to go like this just for the record so you know. I have you currently at number two with a real shot at the top overall spot by the time it's all said and done. Like you say, if you get a Lombardi trophy, you'll be number one.
That's what we're working towards right now.
All right, so Rocket Richard for now is number one because he's in the Hall of Fame, but I think you're on your way there. Hey, you're a guy who played your college football, of course, at UCLA, and nice season, by the way, for Mora Jr. and company in 2012. Talk about what's going on over at UCLA and you know, the sort of challenging now of USC.
Well, you know, I think what Jim done is he went and saw his team and he understood his team right off the bat. Where most coaches go, they try to dismantle the team and get guys and cut guys and want to bring their own guys in. He came in and used that first class as a draft class or as his first recruiting class. And he said, this is what we need to move guys around. He moved some guys around where we have Barr, who now went from playing running back, who last year, if he'd have left early, would have came out and been a top five pick. So, you know, when you have guys that do things like that, that know the game and understand where guys belong and put them in the right situation, the right place to be successful, you have a chance. So that's the first thing. Second thing, what they've done with that offense and the quarterback and the players has been phenomenal. I mean, I'm not a big fan of the spread, but what they've done is they put guys in space, and that's all you want. And so that's what they've done, and guys are playing well. And this recruiting class they brought in, I think they brought in six offensive linemen and five DBs, and they're just creating competition all over the place. And competition breeds success, and that's what we want to come out of UCLA.
And weren't you at UCLA this during the winter finishing up your degree?
Yeah, I was there. I actually talked with a bunch of the guys. I was working out with them with what I could do. And it was just nice sitting down and talking with them and letting them pick my mind and just kind of breaking bread with those guys and telling them the ups and downs about school and about the league and just about life in general. So,
well, let me ask you. Now I've been to the campus of UCLA, and for those who are unaware, it's hillier than you would expect. Now, you're rehabbing from an injury. How did you get around campus?
I had a little push scooter that was great going downhill.
Yeah.
But going uphill was horrible, so.
So you were in, like, one of those rascal scooters, like a senior citizen at a casino.
No. This is the one where you put one leg on it and you just kick scoot. It was horrible.
That's even worse.
Up a hill. That sounds horrible.
It was horrible. It was. And I left there as a friend. Bro, so we were okay in that aspect of it.
Yeah, that's better, because if you were on a rascal, then people would say, look at that prima donna. He used to be a regular guy, and now look at him. He's an NFL guy riding around in his rascal. Hey, MJD, last question for you. Something we were talking about the other day is pizza toppings. I'm giving you not one pizza topping, not three. You get two pizza toppings. You can choose any under the sun. What are the two best pizza
toppings?
Pepperoni
and olives.
Ooh, I like that. Nice and salty, spicy. I like where your head's at there.
Yeah, it's simple. You know, whenever the kids want to have pizza, they make sure they get half pepperoni and olives for dad.
I like it. I like where your head's at. That's a mature taste bud, too. The kids probably don't like the olives on there, but you're on the right track.
No. And also, you know, talking about the kids, you've been coaching, haven't you? How's MJD the coach doing?
Oh, man, coaching kids is probably the toughest thing I've ever done in my life. So we have our last game 2 weeks from now, mm-hmm. and It's been a long season. I'm the head coach of 4 or 12 4-year-olds. So you understand my pain, you know. But it's fun. It's exciting teaching these guys the game. They actually listen, which is crazy. And, you know, we just enjoy it. You know, I'm trying to teach them some spin moves. We got the stiff arm down. We've got to work on our in-and-out move and catching the ball. But we'll be all right. We've gotten better throughout the course of the year, so we'll be all right.
Are you on the hot seat, though? What's the record?
Oh, man. Oh, I think we won 1 game out of 5.
So
It's tough. But as long as we get better, I think the parents are okay. They won't fire me.
There's parents on the other side of the sideline sitting there gloating like, yeah, I beat MJD's team this week.
Oh, man, literally. And it's crazy. I guess I didn't know what I was getting myself into until the first time, and I was a little blindsided by it. But parents are real, like, I just thought it was just because it's flag football. It's just, let's be fun, let's have a good time. But no, they yell at their kids, and they want their kids to win. So we'll see how it goes. You know?
4-year-old kids. I have 1 4-year-old boy. I can't imagine trying to coach 12 of them into doing anything simultaneously or in conjunction with one another. So,
because you're not a winner.
That's true. Yeah, well, apparently yeah, neither is MJD. MJD, you only have 1 win.
Yeah, this is what it is, man. I mean, I have kids quitting on me. It's all type of craziness. I told them, as long as we get better, we'll be fine. So I've been bribing them with Krispy Kreme donuts and pizza at practice. So hopefully they can continue to play. And next year we'll be all right.
You're bribing them.
It's a recruiting violation.
Yeah, you have to find ways to get 4-year-olds excited about getting on the field and running and other kids running at them. So I figured, Krispy Kreme donuts before and after games, and then pizza on every Tuesday at practice, will be all right.
Good call. All right, listen, MJD, always terrific to yap with you, insightful on a full range of subjects. Pepperoni and black olives, a good call. And good luck to you, man, in 2013 as, like you say, a new era gets going there. In Jacksonville, go get them Houston Texans and Indianapolis Colts this season. And good luck with the rest of with camp here.
I appreciate it. You guys have a great day.
So there he goes. Nice fella. Knowledgeable, like I say, on a full range of subjects there. I'm a little bit surprised at the, most professional athletes, part of the reason, one of the main ingredients in being a professional athlete, I've surmised. Like I say, I sneak under the velvet rope to report back from the front lines to the rest of the fans out there. And one thing I've picked up on is that professional athletes obviously are otherworldly in terms of their physical ability, but there is a distinction between that and there are other people that are talented, but these guys have a certain, I will say arrogance. They believe in themselves. It's not just confidence. It doesn't occur to them. When you watch games on TV, you think, oh my, I would be destroyed by that. Oh, I wouldn't be able to bounce back from throwing 2 interceptions. They really have an ability to just sort of flip a switch and not look back. And you can tell the unrare occasions when it is in a player's head. But for the most part, they just turn the page. All that said, I'm surprised by the modesty of MJD. Yeah, I didn't play last year very much, so why would I be on the top 100 list?
That's
doesn't
true.
Think he belongs there?
Yeah, it was pretty interesting. I would have thought he would have been a little bit more upset, like, hey, I don't understand why I'm not higher. My body of work speaks for himself. But no, he was very
Then again, when I did challenge him head-to-head about, Doug Martin's ranked ahead of you, he said, I still like to think of myself as number one. So he did. So I guess there is a little bit of that
competitive stuff. Yeah, I don't think you don't quite get the mind of us competitors who really are able to just not think about things.
Right.
That, you make a bad play.
You know how to get that tunnel vision, don't you, Rank?
I do. Listen, nobody plays more hours of EA Sports NCAA 13 than I. And you know what? Sometimes your quarterback, you make a bad play, but you got to be back out there because those kids in Denmark, they're coming, they're bringing it every play.
Yeah.
So you can't afford to get caught up in the moment. You just have to stay the course.
Why are you wearing a suit?
Why would I not wear it? Because I'm a professional?
Fair enough. I like that answer. I'd like to be a suit and tie guy. I wish I just
would you?
Was. I just think that if I did
you
that all of a sudden.
You can't even tuck in your shirt.
I feel like if I suddenly became a suit and tie guy, it would be weird. I'd like to just walk around in one, but I think people would say, what's going on with Damashek? Who's he think he is?
I like you as a suit and tie guy whose suit and tie is disheveled. Well, at all times, I think you could really pull that look off.
Yeah.
Because people would always think, where's Damashek just come from? And there'll be an air of mysteriousness around you.
Hmm. Yeah, like a hard-boiled reporter. I'll get a chapeau, right. Too, and I'll put a tag in it that says press in the band, yep. You know? So, all right, Rank, you didn't get to weigh in on the last episode. Again, you were off in Seattle doing stuff. What were you? You were looking at Microsoft or something?
Yeah, we were up at Microsoft for the big unveiling of Xbox One.
Was it cool?
It was really cool. If you go to NFL.com/FanPass, we do a behind-the-scenes tour. They gave us a lot of access to see how they are going through the process, as you would say, Hank, of creating the new Xbox One. Seeing how they make the controllers, all the testing that they go through. We got to see their mission control. And they had this sound chamber that was really it's hard to describe it. That it's a building just in and of itself, separate, but completely soundless. Like, even that there's no floor. You're standing on springs on top of it was so
crazy.
What
the hell are you talking about?
You got to check it out.
Why? Why do you need a building with no floor?
Well, if you've seen the new Xbox One, it has a lot of voice commands. So if you're sitting there and you're playing your game and you want to pause it, or if you want to pause a movie because you'll be able to watch movies on this, you say Xbox pause. Now, the problem is if you're watching like a Michael Bay movie, there's a lot of noise going on. So that Xbox has to be able to recognize your voice competing against all the other sounds in the room and pull it out. And so they had that room in there so that they could really hone that part of the machine. It's really amazing stuff. It's getting far beyond me. You know, I'm no longer a young man who can just understand how these things work. And it seems like it's funny as you get older.
As though when you were a young man, you did understand how those things
work. I did. You know what? I mean, it's funny because you have children who are young. I have nieces and nephews who are young. Hank, you have children who are young. It's weird how they pick up iPads and things like that.
I agree. There is something funny about that, that their brains are more advanced in that regard, that they can pick up cell phones and like, whoa, I got to show. No, and they're already playing the game.
Yes.
How do you figure that one out, kid?
They've already downloaded a movie on Netflix. Yeah. Like, wait, I don't even know how to do that.
Yeah, my little girlie has on more than one occasion taken my cell phone, and I find that she's downloaded little apps of dress-up girls and stuff like that. It's very strange.
It's crazy.
Best to blame her for that.
So, yeah, exactly. Yes, I'm deflecting. Rank, quickly.
Yes,
best two-topping combo for a pizza?
Pepperoni and jalapenos.
All right.
That's my favorite.
I don't think you're insane on that one. Black tie, how say you?
That's a good one. I got to go with also jalapenos, but I'm going to go with anchovies. Not for everyone.
I've mentioned
that people who like them, delightful.
They are good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I don't like it. I like anchovies paired with other things, especially with the salt, how salty they are. But it is a stand, like, because it's you're asking it to carry that slice,
right?
With the jalapenos,
there is a.
I think it's a number two. It's a number two. It's not
a Scottie Pippen topping. Right. It's not a MJ topping.
Man, we got to talk about that too. We won't do it now because the debate club boys are walking in here as we speak. But let me tell you something. We have got to get into this Lakers situation and Dwight Howard, and I really want to kibitz about this. We have 10 minutes next week, Rank. We really have to get into this thing because the notion that Dwight Howard, after a season's worth of bashing him from the local media, they destroyed him. When Dwight Howard goes elsewhere, the local media here in Los Angeles is going to wring their hands. How dare he walk away? Don't they know this is the Los Angeles Lakers? We groom Hall of Fame centers and we deliver rings. Yeah, except that you berated him and blamed him. He was the target for why the Lakers weren't good, even though he was playing injured the entire season. And when he leaves, now you're going to be outraged that he left you. Yeah, you pushed him out. You made him leave. Of course, he's a sensitive soul, this character. Hey, boy, that team's going to be, I'll tell you, and when he does leave, then what? What's that? That's going to be a lost season in Staples Center, except for the Clippers.
Oh, no. You know what?
It's going to be bad. Kobe Bryant with the bum Achilles, old man Kobe, older man Steve Nash, and Pau Gasol. Boy, that's going to be some team.
being a leader of the Lakers is not for everybody. Dwight Howard is certainly probably he's certainly not up for the test, so that's fine. Go do what you go be an anonymous piece of the Rockets. That's fine with me. Don't act like the Lakers haven't had their bad spells before. We had this Cedric Ceballos, Nick
Van
Exel.
This team ain't going to the playoffs.
That's fine.
Year.
You know what? When they drafted Andrew Bynum, that was coming off a lottery year. It happens. You know what? The Lakers have had to rebuild before. People do look at all the championships, and it has been a pretty remarkable run when you look back at Magic Johnson, or if you even want to go further back to Jerry West. So there's been bad years. There'll be another bad year. It'll still be fun. They'll bring in a bunch of young guys that'll compete. It'll be fun.
We kind of talked about it now, but we do have to dig more into it, and the Stanley Cup playoffs are rolling on, so that's something else we have to kibitz about, looking more and more like we're going to get a Bruins-Penguins finals in the Whales, and we'll see if the Wings can knock off those Hawks. If that's true, then the Penguins become the prohibitive favorite to win the Stanley Cup if you take the Hawks out on the other side. All right, listen. Handsome Hank, a pleasure to see you. Black tie, a little less so. Rank, welcome back as well. Good luck with Sunday night opening up there for Spade and Company at the Irvine Improv. Real quick, though, let me ask everybody. Most famous, best Maurice of the names I listed there. Who do we like best? Cheeks, Maurice Richard, Sendek, who wrote Where the Wild Things Are, or MJD, your favorite Maurice. And by the way, Maurice, some name, huh? Yeah. I really like that name, Maurice. Can you imagine naming your kid Maurice?
That's a bold move.
You could have done that, Hanson.
I like Mo as well.
I know, Mo. That's what Mo Cheeks is. Who's your vote? Maurice, I think it boils down to Rocket Richard or MJD. Who goes down as the greatest Maurice in sports history?
I say the Maurice from the Steve Miller song.
Oh, off the board. Off the board there. There's also Maurice Lucas, too.
Oh, yeah.
I forgot about him.
That's a good one.
Black tie, how say you?
I'll stick with MJD.
All right.
Mostly because I don't really, I'm not
acknowledge the existence of hockey.
Oh, Maurice Claret.
All right. Well, he's not going to win, but
he's not going to win, but yeah, he's an interesting name.
Yeah, Claret. I forgot about him. Handsome Hank.
I'm a big fan of Where the Wild Things Are, so I'm going to just take it there.
All right. Let's make that our poll question. Greatest Maurice. I like that. All right. Listen. Now we're going to get up, walk out of Studio 66, but hang in because as we walk out, in shall walk Dan Hanzus and Mark Sessler, the two parts, the two debaters on the Around the League Debate Club. Get ready, Flames. Here they come. We'll be back with more Huey and Applesauce next week. Take it away, Flames.
Hanzus and Mr. Fancy Pants. The Flames need NFL news, and here's their chance. It's ATL, Around the League. Light a flame, boys. Pigskin's hot tonight. Burn, baby, burn.
Thanks, Dave. Welcome back to another edition of the ATL Debate Club. My name is Dan Hanzus, and I'm joined, as always, by a man who never met an anonymous source he didn't trust, Mark Sessler.
You know, one of these weeks, I'm going to start the show and drop, like, some dirty laundry on you. How about it's 18, 19 weeks in a row where you've flamed me with some title.
No, it's truthful, and as long as I keep on dropping truth bombs, you know, you can't really complain.
Very little of it has been truthful.
This is a treat. We have a full show today. Behind the glass, the great, iconic producer, Black Tie, who is helping us out. Black Tie, thank you for working for us today. This is great.
What's happening, fellas?
Wow, we get sound bites, too.
How much do you get paid to jump in and produce this show?
This show? I'm actually helping out Wilk. Ty, who's actually not around, so it's more of a favor.
Wilk on his heels.
No call, no show from Wilk. It would have been nice if he would have been like, "Hey guys, I'm out this week." Instead, you know, there's just cobwebs at his desk, and we're like, "Oh, I guess we're gonna have a different producer."
Yeah,
very little communication.
Though. Black Tie is the man, though. We're very excited to have him. We don't have Rank here for the animosity to get ramped up. We just enjoy your work, so.
Well, I'm glad to be here. It's my third podcast of the day, actually, so
holy
a bit
God.
On the tired side, but we'll make it through.
And for Around the League Debate Club completists, because we know they're out there, Black Tie did produce one show prior. He hit record, And then he walked out the door and did some other work. So we basically, it was the
strangely one of our better shows.
Yeah, it was the first NFL.com podcast on record, I think, that had no one sitting on the other side of the glass.
Hey, I had faith in you guys.
Like I said, we have a big show today, Mark.
We do. We've actually gone and done some producing. We've lined up a few guests.
Mm-hmm.
Excited about them. And I think we've got a debate on our hands, too, in general, you and I.
Mm-hmm. This is the debate club.
Well, we're not in a good place when it comes to your New York Jets.
Well, I mean, that's a kind of a weird way to put it. We're not in a good place.
You and I are not in a good place.
Explain further.
It is hard for me to conjure up an NFL team that is driving me nuts to a higher degree than everything having to do with the Jets at this point.
Yeah.
Well, and you continue to find...
root for my favorite team?
Yeah. Well, number one, you are a journalist in theory. You shouldn't be rooting for them. But
wow. Well, no one's called me that before.
Well, I do, as your friend. I'm concerned about your objectivity. Not really, but we do seem to not agree on major, you know, tentpole issues with this team in terms of its quarterback play.
If you want to cut to the core of it, we disagree on Sanchez on some level. I don't think Sanchez is as bad as you put Sanchez as the worst quarterback in football on a countdown list last week, which was otherwise excellent. But you know, I think with the Jets, they can't get out of the news, and they're not even a relevant team in terms of Super Bowl expectations anymore. But it's almost like, you know, the media in general is trained to this team that we need to continue. And as a Jets fan, it gets a little tiresome to have to deal with that. I mean, there's so many topics to deal with about them. It's pretty good, though, since us producing the show, as Wilk is on a tropical island somewhere listening to The Killers on his iPod, we got in touch with one of the best beat guys in the business, the great Manish Mehta of the New York Daily News, and we have him on the line right now. Manish, are you there?
I am.
There he is.
There he is.
One of the great beat guys in the country, as I said. And, you know, while we have Manish on the phone, my first meeting with him was at the Super Bowl in New Orleans in February at Radio Row. He was having what I'll call an animated conversation with former Jets general manager Mike Tannenbaum, and I remember thinking to myself, this dude's intense. No wonder he's, you know, doing so well at his job. So, you know, we've gotten to know each other. He's a big Don Mattingly fan. And Manish, thank you for coming on.
Hey, anytime, guys. I prefer to categorize that discussion as a spirited talk with Mike Tannenbaum.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
As this floats through league circles, that probably will do you better. Right off the bat, question for you. You know, we get to work this morning, and invariably there's seven or eight Jets storylines that hit us that we at Around the League need to fashion into posts, short and readable. And this thing this morning that launched, this anonymous source yet again for the Jets, talking Mark Sanchez, suggesting that 80 to 90% of the roster feels that it's time for him to take a seat, get someone new in there. Have you heard anything along these lines? Do you have a take on this?
Well, I can tell you at this point, we're talking about mid to late May. The guys that I've spoken to in the locker room really just want the best quarterback, the guy that's going to help them win games. I don't think there's any kind of preconceived notion of favoring Mark Sanchez or Geno Smith. And keep in mind, guys, about, I would say, 25% of the roster turned over. So you've got about 19, 20 new guys in that locker room. So I think that each guy is going to get a fair opportunity. I understand that there's one guy who believes that maybe 80 to 90% of the locker room favors Geno Smith. I haven't taken the temperature of everybody in that locker room, but the sentiment that I get in the early going right now is that they don't really care who gets the starting nod, whether it's the rookie or the 50-year guy. They just want the guy that's going to help them win football games.
Yeah, and, you know, while on the topic of quarterbacks, you've been around Geno Smith a bit now, and, you know, I've gotten a chance to talk to him twice, but I haven't been around him as much as you. But I've gotten a pretty decent impression of him in terms of how he deals with the media and you know, how he carries himself. I mean, he caught a lot of flack, obviously, after the draft about, you know, his attitude and such. What kind of vibe are you getting from him early on?
He's handled himself really well thus far, Dan. It's in the early going, and he's handled himself like a professional. And I would hope that with everything that went on pre-draft and then in the immediate aftermath after he fired his agents that he would handle himself in this way. You don't want to come across as a diva before you've even played the game. So my first impressions are pretty solid. He seems like a solid guy. And I've told people all along, whether it's Geno Smith or anybody else new that you meet, their true character is going to reveal itself over time. But you do want to give him the benefit of the doubt. And in the early going, he's handled himself very well.
Yeah. You know, yesterday, you know, Rex spoke out about Sanchez's struggles with the turnovers. You know, Geno had one too. I mean, was that, you know, is that something where you think, I know Marty Mordenwig, the offensive coordinator, said that, you know, they'd like to have a starter in place next month, ideally. Is Sanchez really in trouble here? Is he going to have to be almost perfect going forward to hold on to this job, or do you think it's a 50-50 shot?
I don't think he's going to have to be perfect, but I do believe that you can play yourself out of the job this early before training camp even begins. And we only got a small window into these OTAs with that one session yesterday, and he did throw three picks. I don't know whose fault those three picks were. Judging from the sideline, you always point to the quarterback, but you don't know if the receiver's running the right route. You don't necessarily know what kind of other factors were involved. That gets dissected by the quarterbacks and the coaches after practice. But what I can tell you is that you can absolutely lose your job now. I don't think that you can win the job now. When I spoke to Mordenwig recently about the timetable he has for picking a starter, he did say that he's not averse to naming a guy or having the organization name a guy before they even go to Cortland for training camp in late July. I just think that it's going to be difficult for either Sanchez or Geno to separate himself from the other guy over these next 10 practices. I don't see that happening. I think it makes most sense to see these guys in live action tackling against another team in the preseason when you're going up against live competition. Now, the downside to that, guys, is that when you do that, it will take you longer to name a starter, and then when you do name that starter, you're going to have a shorter amount of time to prepare that guy for the start of the regular season. But again, if you're going to have a full-blown competition, as Mordenwig has indicated, I think that makes the most sense.
Okay, and you know, let's talk Rex a little bit, because you know, you followed him since the start, and you know, he was there in 09, you were there. I mean, is there a difference with him? I know some people have said that he's lost some of the bluster as the team has started to struggle. Is he a different guy than he was 4 years ago, 5 years ago?
I think he's the same guy in terms of his internal confidence, his self-confidence in not only himself and his coaching staff, but his players. I just think he's projecting it in a much more subdued manner. And you really have to. I don't think you can write soon-to-be champs on a van after you've come off consecutive seasons where you haven't made the playoffs. So that strikes the reason that he wouldn't be out as outlandish and make these brash statements as he had those first couple years. But in terms of his belief in himself and his belief that this team actually can be a playoff team, I don't think that's wavered. I think if you ask him in an honest moment, quietly, do you think that this team could make the playoffs, he would tell you yes, and he would also have a caveat that it's going to be extremely difficult. But I don't think he's a guy that goes into a practice or goes into a game ever thinking that he's not going to come out on top. That's just his mentality. That's the way he's wired.
Well, I mean, taking a look at his arc as a coach, he came in, he immediately, I think, put the New England Patriots on blast. They won a playoff game against the Patriots. It really seemed that the Jets, in general, as a franchise, were taking a turn. Things have been ugly since. Do you feel like he is really coaching for his job this season? Is there a reality inside that franchise that if he doesn't do something special, it's done for Rex Ryan?
Well, I will say this. Typically, marriages between general managers and head coaches that they inherit don't work out. And if John Idzik's going to have autonomy over this organization, he's probably going to want to pick his own guy. Now, if the Jets surprise people and win 9 or 10 games, maybe don't make the playoffs, but are over 500, perhaps there's a chance that Rex Ryan could stay on board. But if you're going to believe that John Idzik does have the decision-making control over his head coach after this season, and I do believe that Woody Johnson will have a say, but I think the owner is going to give his general manager the authority to ultimately make a decision on that head coach. So to answer your question in a roundabout way, yeah, I do think that Rex Ryan is coaching for his job. He's got 2 years left. He signed through 2014 for somewhere around $7 million, $6 to $7 million in that range. I think that's partly why he did not get fired after this past season. But to touch on what you just said earlier, he did breathe life into this organization. He did change the culture of this organization, and I know that Woody Johnson likes him, but it's going to be awfully tough to keep him aboard if they miss the playoffs for the third consecutive year.
I mean, do you feel, let's say you were covering the Kansas City Chiefs out in the middle of the country, do you feel like you actually are doing two men's jobs by having to cover this team? It seems like a 24/7 experience. What's it been like for you from when you started?
Well, you know, I can tell you that I haven't seen my wife that much during the course of the season over these past 4 years. But look, they make a lot of storylines. The root of that, of course, is Rex. And like as we said earlier, the first 2 years, he was a headline pretty much every day. And there's never a dull moment. It's always exciting. It's particularly fun when they're making these headlines and they're also winning on the field. That's why 2009 and 2010 were particularly enjoyable from a journalist standpoint. But, you know, even when they were losing these past couple of years, they seemed to be in the headlines for probably reasons that they wouldn't like. So, yeah, it's an all-encompassing type of deal, and it's always entertaining. I'd much rather prefer this over, you know, a boring team that's, you know, I don't want to single out Kansas City, but a team that kind of lays in the weeds and isn't out there in the forefront like the Jets are.
Yeah, and we'll let you go after this because I'm sure, you know, you have 17 subplots to cover before the end of the day. I do want to know, because we're a well-rounded podcast, and Manish is actually, surprising to me, a big country fan. You have any country album recommendations for our listeners that might be into that type of music?
I do, and as a matter of fact, I'm glad you brought this topic up because I was at a Tim McGraw concert this past weekend in South Jersey, and he's got a new album out, Two Lanes of Freedom. I highly recommend it. He's also got a collaboration with Neil, of all people, a terrific song. So I think if you're a country fan, you're looking for something good to get, Two Lanes of Freedom, Tim McGraw.
Wow, you sound almost like a PR flack for Tim McGraw.
I'm a big Tim McGraw fan. I'm also a big Tug McGraw fan, his father.
Oh, yes.
I just enjoy the music, and like I said, the guy puts on a great show, and he's got a great new album out.
Well, that's great, and hopefully the music you know, helps keep you sane during another tough Jets season.
It definitely does.
All right, man. Well, thank you very much, Manish. Again, we love reading your opinions and your reporting. You do a great job with the Jets, and we hope to have you on again.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Thank you.
There you go. Manish giving us a really detailed breakdown of Tim McGraw's not only his new album, but I believe his tour schedule.
I don't know. Manish is sort of a renaissance man because you're covering one of the most high-octane franchises in sports, and you're going to a country concert. I wouldn't have expected that.
Yeah. And, you know, he gave a lot of good insight on the Jets. It's going to be another interesting season. It probably won't be a competitive season, but, you know, I agree with him what he said about Rex. I think, you know, Rex almost needs a miracle at this point to keep this job. I think maybe if they get to 8 wins, that's enough to convince management. But I think anything less, they're going to want a fresh start.
I think it's important. One quick thing that he noted before we move on, that this is a roster that's changed a ton. And I think they've removed some of the stale elements that probably plagued the locker room and pulled it down last year.
Right.
I do think that Rex seems encouraged. He seems like kind of fired up to coach this team. And, you know, we saw Bill Belichick do his best coaching job the year he didn't have Tom Brady, I think. Mm-hmm. They still went 11-5. Rex has the chance to do something no one's expected. I don't think it will happen, but we'll see.
What's
for
up?
For your sanity, I hope so.
Yeah, right. What's up next today? Let's keep train rolling.
So Sanchez is 26 years old. Mm. And we have a series.
Ought to be 26.
But it would be better, or potentially not, if he were 25, because he would have a shot of making a list that is hot on the ATL wires right now. Greg Rosenthal's top 10 quarterbacks under 25.
Are you setting it up for
that
us to
was,
call Greg
I
Rosenthal?
I think that we should. That, by the way, that was a very smooth transition on my part.
Black Tie, how was that transition, 1 out of 10?
That was a pretty good one. Damashek isn't really as smooth for reasons we all know, because he just goes off on random tangents. But real quick, just to, not to break up your awesome transition, Manish, I dug through my audio drops library. I couldn't get a country one. I'm sorry. I was.
Well, if you ever produce again and he's back on the show, we should have something ready.
I'll be ready to go.
Why don't we give him a call? We love catching Greg off balance, you know. Let's see how he reacts.
All right, let's do it. Call him right now.
You know, I love
It's good to catch our boss off, you know, let's get him on his heels.
It's one of my favorite things to do because you never know what Greg's doing, you know.
Let's find out, guys.
Let's find out.
Let's find out.
Greg?
What's happening?
Wait, what? You know, you tricked us.
Well, he's been on the whole time. I'm listening.
He's been
to
on
you.
The line the entire
I've had
time.
Ears everywhere.
When Dan says that no one knows what Greg is doing, what he assumes is work your way out of this, Dan.
Well,
he's working, right?
Listen, I thought all these comments were going to be made as the phone was ringing.
Yeah.
But Black Tie pulled the rug out from under us there. So when you know, people always tell me like, don't trust Black Tie, our producer, and now we learned a hard lesson.
I didn't know if you wanted me to play along, like this was some sort of thing, some sort of bit you were doing, but no, yeah. I heard all that.
Yeah, we don't do bits. It's all organic, very real.
Oh, yeah.
Very real.
It's very real. Hey, Greg, thank you for coming back on the ATL Debate Club. Chris Wessling, our other ATL writer, is now in the building. So that is three-fourths, or at least three-fifths of the team. We're waiting on you now, Greg.
And I'll be there in 2 weeks. I don't know if you guys are really going to enjoy this change. I don't know if you know what it's going to be a change. I'm moving to L.A. In a couple of weeks, so I will be there.
Yeah. Well, that's a little bit foreboding. What was that all about?
What's up?
What was that all about? It was like you may not like it. Are you going to whip us if you don't like a post or put us in a corner?
I'm just saying that the intensity you're feeling through the instant messages we go back and forth on every day, now it's going to be like right in your face. It might be a little much, you know? I feel like Everyone out in L.A. at the L.A. offices, they're moving at a different speed. Everyone's so nice.
Yeah, Greg often makes comments to us like, you guys aren't tough and all this stuff. So now he's going to be in the office, and he'll see what it's like working in a newsroom where, you know, people are always screaming and walking up to his Damashek rolling over and, you know, unfurling these long theories while we're trying to pump out content. You know, the game's not going to just change for us, Greg. It's going to change for you as well.
Yeah, that's true. I'm more worried about me and my wife and her reaction and pretty much everything. So it's a fair point.
The other person I'm worried about a little bit is Wes, because before moving to urban Los Angeles, he lived off an island off Georgia. It seemed like a Dawson's Creek type setting.
No.
And
it was like an artistic colony for people who think differently.
And now this, no, it's not like L.A. is not the same as this artistic colony, I would say.
L.A. is no Tybee Island. I mean, all his pictures were like writing posts with his feet kicked up and a beer and on the beach. It'll be a little different.
It's over.
We are a little concerned about Wes, but he seems to be doing fairly well in his transition so far. All right, so Greg, before we got you on, we noted that we just talked with Manish Mehta from the New York Daily News, and one of the topics was Sanchez. The guy is 26. Some called him a very old 26, potentially done with his NFL career.
Ah, to be 26.
You're working on a quarterback's list of people 25 and even younger than 25, ranking them 1 through 10. The NFL Network's all over this thing. They're loving you. Where are we in this list right now?
We're hitting number 7, Ryan Tannehill, coming out on Thursday. Tempted to put him a little higher. I do love me some Ryan Tannehill.
Greg loves Ryan Tannehill.
He detected that very early on in the season last year, and I don't think it was you just trying to be necessarily a contrarian against all the excess of love for RG3 and Luck. You really saw something in him. What is it that you see?
Well, he's got, if you look past the numbers a little bit, and, you know, the fact he was clearly the fourth best rookie last year. But if you look past that a little bit, he's got everything you would possibly want if you were putting together what you want in a franchise quarterback. And, you know, his rookie year stacks up, I think, well, when you watch it. He's someone I think watching him game to game looks far more impressive than you expect. I think people don't think that highly of him because in his big games, his national TV games, the Bills game on Thursday night, some of the Patriots games, those were his worst games.
Now one thing with Tannehill is he has some weapons now. Do you see him making that leap this year now that he has some guys to throw to and guys around him?
That's the thing. I put him 7. That put him behind Stafford, Russell Wilson, Cam Newton. It wouldn't surprise me if he has a better season, Tannehill, that is, than some of those guys. It wouldn't at all because I mean, he moves in the pocket. His arm is great. He pretty much just does a little bit of everything. He kind of acted like a veteran. He wasn't known for that, changing plays. Pretty much, he's got touch. The one thing he wasn't great was he was a little back and forth accuracy-wise. But, yeah, I think he's going to make a leap. I think he's going to be very good. I'm a little worried about the rest of his team still coming together, but I think he'll be great.
What are the chances? Do you think it's possible he could be, if you do this list again next year, this top 10 under 25, that he could be in the top three? Does he have that type of potential to you?
Yeah. I don't see why he doesn't have potential to be a top five NFL quarterback. You know, maybe not next year.
Man, the love affair is just
all of that.
Amazing. This is an amazing love affair between you and Ryan Tannehill.
Well, let's talk.
What is it about Ryan Tannehill that you don't like? I mean, give me something that isn't there.
No, it's not, I think all the tools are there. I agree with you on that. It's just, you know, you are all in on Tannehill in the fact that you kind of bought in early. So if he does step up, you're going to reap all the rewards. But you're also kind of out there right now on him a little bit. Let's face it.
Yeah, that's fine. And every time I watch, I'm a little more convinced. Put it this way. He's the fourth guy. And there was Bradford, Dalton, and number 10 on the list was Freeman. You know, Tannehill made more plays that you're just like, wow. You know, I don't see Tom Brady or guys like that do that much in a game or two than all of those guys did combined.
That's fair.
With a guy like Cam Newton, who's 24, doesn't turn 25 till next May, do you, in your eyes, did he rise or fall? I know you can't judge him against the guys he had to deal with before because you got this influx of rookies, but did his stock drop a little bit last season?
A little bit, not much. You know, I think I expected him to take a big leap, kind of like I was just talking of Tannehill. There's that feeling that, you know, rookie quarterback is so tough that you're going to take a big leap as a second year. I don't think he took a huge leap. I think he was a little better overall once you factor in his second half. But he didn't improve as much as I thought. I don't think he was as good in either of his years as Luck and RG3 were in their rookie year.
Is it hard to get excited about a guy like Andy Dalton? Like, Damashek is just glowing over the Cincinnati Bengals like he did a season ago and announcing them as the crowned kings of the AFC North. But I look at Dalton and he's functional. He certainly keeps his mistakes down. But it's not the next Joe Flacco in my book where he's this big arm guy that just needs a big season. I just see him as a guy with limited gifts. What about you?
Yeah, I worry that he's a guy that's maxing out his ability. I mean, he really struggles throwing the ball down the field. I mean, that's the thing. With quarterbacks, they all get judged on wins, and Dalton has a lot of hype because, I mean, you put Ryan Tannehill or some of these guys on that Bengals team, and they're going to look pretty good too. That's the defense, everything else. I think Dalton's good, but yeah, long term, I'm not too excited about him.
To circle back, to come full circle in this conversation, tonight after work, we are going to take Chris Wessling out for drinks in Culver City, California.
Wow.
Yeah, at a dive bar called The Cozy. You know, I'm wondering if we get a couple drinks in him, if he's going to pull a Job from Arrested Development and say, I think I've made a huge mistake.
But I honestly do fear for what's going to happen to him.
Well, you know, we're happy to have Chris and Greg. We're waiting your arrival. We're waiting your arrival, and we're not scared. We're not scared. We're excited.
I'm excited.
All right, Greg. Thank you, and we will be back down cranking out posts as soon as this is over.
See you guys.
Bye. All right. Before we go, wanted to bring up something in the NFL.com newsroom, or the, I should say, because synergy is key, the NFL media newsroom yesterday. Once again, all work came to a standstill because NFL Network aired the Tecmo Bowl special by NFL Films, which is, you know, it's getting into iconic status in terms of NFL Network programming. And, hey, Black Tie, have you seen this? I'm sure you have.
Haven't seen it yet, though. I'm interested to hear.
Who are
you,
by the way, Black Tie? How have you not seen this?
Well, I'm a films guy, to be honest. I actually used to be in films. I've said it a lot in the DDFP. I'm saying it here.
Yeah.
I'm a films alum myself, so I'm a big fan of their work. I just haven't seen this in particular.
Well, this reminds me. They've been playing it a lot recently on the network. It kind of reminds me back in the mid-90s when HBO played the 80s classic Just One of the Guys basically on loop throughout a whole summer. And, you know, I remember seeing that hundreds of times. That is now happening with this Tecmo Bowl special that originally aired in October. There's a breakout character named Mort, who is from Buffalo. He works as like a forklift operator, and he spends something like multiple hours per day practicing. We actually have some sound clips of Mort, who's become something of a hero, underdog hero in the NFL media newsroom. Black Tie, can you roll those clips out?
I always try to keep my edge in these other guys. Try to find some new little trick, some new little game I could toy with them with.
My name is Francis Buenagel, but to the Tecmo world, I'm known as Mort. I'm 28 years old from Buffalo. I work for a beer company in the city.
And also, there's one more clip where he talks about, you know, guys thinking it's cool and women being terrified.
I've been practicing about 3 or 4 hours a day. Hey, I want the title back. I like being number one in the country, not number two.
If I get the feeling somebody's guessing a running play, I'll just sit on my passing plays and wait.
Guys usually think it's the coolest thing they ever heard of. My friends still go around telling other friends, this is the guy who goes around traveling to Tecmo Bowl tournaments. I think the girls, they don't say it, but in the background, they're like, well, you gotta be kidding me, right?
I love Mort so very much.
When your average woman, I don't know who he's speaking to, has no idea what... It's not that she's immediately reacting to a career in Tecmo Bowl.
Yeah.
She has never heard of Tecmo Bowl.
Yeah, and I guess we could have set it up better. There's you know, tournaments that take place throughout the country, and he's, you know, known as one of the better tournament players. You grew up playing Tecmo. We all have. We all played Super
right.
Tecmo Bowl. You have a story that I would like.
Well, I think it's a sample of this... game overtook my life. My brother Eric and I, who's younger than I, and a friend Peter Acton, the same exact age as myself, spent I think it was 5 months playing a double elimination tournament. It was a massive bracket where when you lost, you went to a whole different separate giant poster board bracket. And with each game, we would write up, not too different from ATL, to be honest, like a post about each game, but with you know, colored marker in what is now like 3-4-inch spiral-bound notebooks, tracking, I think we got to 970 games played over the course of a summer. So I feel like if I'd taken a different turn, I could have been the guy who wound up in some, you know, shack in Buffalo playing.
A sharp left turn.
Yeah.
You know, two things that we need to take out of that. First of all, I would call you a loser, but I was... maybe not as meticulous and note-taking as you were, but I was obsessed with that game to the point where, you know, that was one of the first games, if not the first game, where you could track stats over a season, and it had some type of save function, but it didn't always save. So I remember I'd be so nervous about losing my, you know, I think I played with the Niners. I stayed away from Bo Jackson out of respect. But, you know, I would leave the Nintendo on all day or play an entire season just so I didn't lose the stats. But here's my thing. Number one, and this will be a assignment for Wilktie, is we got to track down Mort, and we got to get Mort on the phone.
I would say for next week.
For next week, ASAP. We need to talk to him about how his life has changed, how many more titles he's won, if he has a girlfriend. I have so many questions. Number two, you need next trip home to find this notebook, and I want to... see some of these stories.
I'll bring them in. It's in a box in my parents' house, and I can confirm that it did nothing for my interactions with females as a youth.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, I mean, this nothing. When that game was out, that was maybe at the beginning of a very long single period that lasted through high school for the most part. So yeah, there was a lot of time for Tecmo Bowl. We are out of time.
We got to go,
and that's a transition. Black Tie, how about that transition? Thank you to Manish Mehta again. He was kind enough to come on, and Greg Rosenthal, who a foreboding message about our future.
Little concerned about that, but we've got time to prepare. It's our home court.
It is, and we must protect this house. Until next time.